April is National Poetry Month, and writer and author Clint Smith has a new book out of poems. It's called Above Ground. Clint Smith is staff writer at The Atlantic, and he is also the author of a nonfiction book, How the Word Is Passed, Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. Clint, welcome back to Here and Now.
It's so good to be back.
Your poems are about fatherhood, about race in this country, about the passage of time, big questions to contemplate. What is it about poetry that can deliver what you want to say?
You know, I think for me, poetry is the act of paying attention. It is something that allows me to archive these moments with my kids, to create sort of time capsules that allows me to look back on not necessarily these big moments, because so much of parenthood is, you know, it's not the weddings, the birthdays, or the big parties. It's those small moments. It's having a dance party with your kids after dinner. It's making French toast with your kids. It's watching your kid go down the slide and seeing how exhilarated they are. And so what I wanted to do was write a book of poems that tried to capture those moments and also the moments that are more difficult, you know, because parenthood is the thing that is filled with so much love and laughter and levity. And it's also filled with a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and it's really exhausting and difficult. Yeah. And I'm interested in the way that poems allow you to hold both of those realities alongside one another.
You know, I'm a parent too, and my children are in high school and college, but it so resonates with how I just kind of think about parenthood and the passage of time. You know, you have one poem about cicadas and the 17-year-old cycle, and, you know, where will my children be the next cycle? Mm. And very often you're suggesting to us, the reader, you know, two things can be true at the same time. Parenthood can have hope and despair. Life with children is to be celebrated, and it's also fleeting. Mm. And I want to ask you to read All at Once.
Absolutely. All at Once. The redwoods are on fire in California. A flood submerges a neighborhood that sat quiet on the coast for three centuries. A child takes their first steps and tumbles into a father's arms. Two people in New Orleans fall in love under an oak tree whose branches bend like sorrow. A forest of seeds are planted in new soil. A glacier melts into the ocean and the sea climbs closer to the land. A man comes home from war and holds his son for the first time. A man is killed by a drone that thinks his jug of water is a bomb. Your best friend relapses and isn't picking up the phone. Your son's teacher calls to say he stood up for another boy in class. A country below the equator ends a 20-year civil war. A soldier across the Atlantic fires the shot that begins another. The scientists find a vaccine that will save millions of people's lives. Your mother's cancer has returned, and the doctors say there is nothing else they can do. There is a funeral procession in the morning and a wedding in the afternoon. The river that gives us water to drink is the same one that might wash us away.
Wow. How did you think about putting all of these together in one poem?
I'm really interested in the sort of simultaneity of the human experience, how our lives are filled with so much messy, complicated emotional texture in the context of our individual lives, where you could be at the park pushing your kid in the swing and then get a call from someone talking about how a loved one has a terminal illness. Yeah. How you can be having breakfast, you know, with your family around the table, laughing and reveling in one another's company. And halfway around the world, there's another family that's just trying to make it to the morning in a bunker underground in a city that's being bombarded with bombs. And so I wanted all of those complications, all of those complexities to line up right alongside one another, because that's what they do every day.
Our producer on our program, Julia Corcoran, says she thinks about your poem, Your National Anthem, almost every day. She's a parent like you and like me, in her case of a young Black boy. Can you read that for us?
Absolutely. Your National Anthem. Today, a Black man who was once a Black boy like you got down on one of his knees and laid his helmet on the grass as this country sang its ode to the promise it never kept. And the woman in the grocery store line in front of us is on the phone. and she is telling someone on the other line that this black man who was once a black boy like you should be grateful we live in a country where people aren't killed for things like this. You know, she says, in some places, they would hang you for such a blatant act of disrespect. Maybe he should go live there instead of here so he can appreciate what he has. Then she turns around and sees you sitting in the grocery store cart, surrounded by lettuce and yogurt and frozen chicken thighs. And you smile at her with your tooth-the-scum smile. And she says you are the cutest baby she has ever seen and tells me how I must feel so lucky to have such a beautiful baby boy. And I thank her for her kind words, even though I know I should not thank her, because I know that you will not always be a black boy, but one day you may be a black man, and you may decide your country hasn't kept its promise to you either. And this woman, or another like her, will forget you were ever this boy, and they will make you into something else, and tell you to be grateful for what you've been given.
Was that poem based on a real-life encounter you had with a woman at the store, or a version of this conversation?
Yeah, no, this is something that happened. The poem is written at the time of Colin Kaepernick's protest, the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback who took a knee in protestation of the police violence and the sort of larger state-sanctioned history of violence that had been taking place against black people. It's interesting. I'm a poet, but I was trained in graduate school by sociologists. A thing that has emerged in the literature around sociology is the adultification of black children, which is to say the way that black children are seen as adults many years before their white counterparts. The things that might simply represent an opportunity to learn from a mistake for one child might be existential for a black child. You know, that is the sort of ever-present tension of being a parent to a black child, is how do you convey the realities of the world to keep them safe while also wanting them to be a child and to not be encumbered by a legacy of racism, a legacy of violence, and to want them to be have no limits and to be limited only by the possibility of their imaginations. And so that's part of what the poem is thinking about and wrestling with. You know, this idea that I'm cognizant that that same woman who saw my child as adorable would then, you know, in a decade or when they're a preteen or a teenager, perhaps see them very differently.
How do you think about hope and faith for these children you're fathering and how you communicate that hope and faith to them?
My first book of nonfiction that came out a few years ago, it's How the Word Is Passed, which is thinking about how different historical sites reckon with or fail to reckon with their relationship to the history of slavery. And one of the things that I think about all the time is how the first enslaved people who came to the British colonies that would become the United States came in 1619, and slavery didn't end formally until 1865. But what's true is that from the moment enslaved people arrived on these shores, they were fighting for freedom, they were fighting for liberation, they were fighting for emancipation. What that also means is that the vast majority of people who were fighting for freedom never got a chance to experience it for themselves. And I'm constantly thinking about how my life is only possible, how my children's lives are only possible because of generations of people who fought for something they knew they might never see. And so what I want for my kids is to understand that history and to know that their lives are not singularly defined by that history. And it's kind of like the poem I read at the beginning. It's all of that. It's all at once. It's the history we carry and the things that are possible because of that history. And what sort of responsibility does that bestow upon us to fight for something in our lives that we might not see, but to do it because that's what was done for us?
Clint Smith is a staff writer at The Atlantic. His book is How the Word Is Passed, and his new book of poems is called Above Ground. Clint, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.